Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eco News Report. This week, your hosts are from the North Coast Environmental Center with Executive Director Larry Glass and Admin and Development Director Bella Waters. The Eco News Report is an exclusive feature of KHSU brought to you by the North Coast Environmental Center, publisher of our regional environmental newspaper, Eco News. Don't forget, you can find this show and other KHSU public affairs shows on the audio archives page at khsu.org. Today, we'll be providing brief snippets of current news that pertain to various environmental topics, such as the Arcata Village Project, how listeners can help protect Klamath Trinity Spring Chinook, new trails, Surfrider's Shotgun Shell Wad Data Collection Project, and current climate change news. So first up is how listeners can help protect the Klamath Trinity Spring Chinook. You can do so by writing comments by today, January 24th, to the FGC at fgc.ca.gov. Again, that's sending email comments by today, 5 p.m. to FGC at fgc.ca.gov. The Karuk Tribe and the Samoth River Restoration Council have petitioned the California Fish and Game Commission to place Klamath Trinity Spring Chinook on the state's endangered species list. Listings would afford new protections and opportunities to fund habitat restoration. Spring Chinook, also called King Salmon, were once the most plentiful salmonoid in the Klamath system, with hundreds of thousands of fish returning to spawn each year. More than a century of dam building, irrigation diversions, mining, and logging have destroyed or denied access to much of the historic habitat. Today, these fish number in the hundreds of individuals. The Klamath Trinity Spring Chinook are genetically distinct from Fall Chinook. They are culturally important. They are prized by anglers and consumers. They are also part of a complex ecosystem, and their genetic diversity is key to species survival. So if you could please email your comments to help protect the Chinook, that would be great. Larry, what do you have for us?
Well, we've got a couple of items of local significance right now. One is Mercer Fraser's asphalt batch plant that is right on the Humboldt Trinity line on Highway 36, just past Dinsmore. It's actually in Trinity County, but it's just right on the county line. And it affects that whole Dinsmore, Van Dusen community out there. And they had a comment period. Our associate member group, CATS, Citizens for Alternatives to Toxic Sprays, and NEC, ask for a public hearing. And not a public hearing in Eureka, we ask for one near the site of the of the plant, which is, by the way, right next to a school. It's funny how these Mercer Fraser projects are always either right next to public water or a school. Anyways, this is right next to a school. So anyways, the Air Board, who is the responsible agency in this one, has announced there will be a public meeting. I called them right before the show here to get a date and a location, but right now they haven't selected a day or a location. But those of you that are interested in that area or listening out in that area, stay aware. The NEC will have it on its website when the announcement is made. In Trinity County news, we've been reporting here, Trinity County is still way behind with its cannabis program in doing any sort of environmental assessment. But finally, after 3 years, they are beginning to start the process of doing CEQA on their cannabis program. They had a 30-day public comment period that ended last week, and they conducted a public meeting about it, in which they ran an ad in the paper that solicited the public to come and tell us what you think in the scoping process. Well, I drove over there on the rainiest day of the year, last Wednesday, and rock slides and whatnot on 299. It was a hellish ride over. And guess what? They didn't want any public comment. In fact, they didn't allow the public to comment. You were allowed to write a question on a piece of paper.
Gee.
So it was kind of a big charade is what it was, and I was not thrilled about that. But we did, SAFE, the group I represent in Trinity County, did issue or submit lengthy scoping comments, and our attorney, Stephen Volker, out of Berkeley, has now sent them comments as well. and a number of other agencies and groups I know got in comments. And what's sort of amazing about this is they're trying to do this CEQA document in what would be record time. I'm not aware of anybody coming up with a full EIR in under 6 months. If somebody's aware of that, then please let me know. But I have never seen that. It's usually a year, year and a half for people. And that's even a sort of lackluster document, let alone a very comprehensive study. So I'm skeptical that they're going to really look into all the environmental impacts that have been happening up till now, are scheduled to happen as this program continues to expand. So we'll see how that shakes out, and I'll let listeners of this program know as things developed. So right here in Arcata, the controversial village project has come back around again. Now, some of you will remember us speaking about this before on EcoNews Reports. The big sort of area of conflict was that these developers, in concert with the university, wanted to have this 600-unit development to be exclusively for students. The community, especially the surrounding, immediately surrounding community, organized and resisted that and took their resistance to the Arcata City Council. The Arcata City Council decided not to approve. It was a split vote with one recused council person and two who didn't vote for it. Susan Ornelas and Brett Watson did not vote for it. And so it was deadlocked and it did not pass. A lot of hand-wringing proceeded then, and people said, oh no, the project's dead. But then there was a lot of us who've been around a while who've seen this happen before who were saying, no, if this is a viable project, it's not dead. They'll just bring it back and maybe have different partners or whatever and repackage it and bring it back. And sure enough, that is what they've done. So there will be a formal meeting to share the project's re-envisionment, which will be on Wednesday, January 30th from 5:30 to 7:30 in the council chambers at Arcata City Hall. And my understanding is that it is now a mixed-use development where there will be non-students and students living in the building. I'm not clear as the exact ratio. I think it's a 60-40 split. 60% being students, 40% just regular folks, families and whatnot, which is a much better mix than just all students, because there's more people in Arcata that need housing besides just students. Anyways, I encourage people to go to that meeting, and a tip of the hat to Brett Watson for hanging tough on that issue. We advised them from the NEC what our input was, and we're glad to see that a project has come back around again that's more to the community's liking.
Well, some other developments in Arcata are that the City of Arcata has received a grant from the Caltrans Sustainable Communities Program to begin plans for a new multi-use trail in Arcata. The new project will be known as the Annie and Mary Trail Connectivity Project, which will create a new trail that will connect Sunset Avenue, Larson Park to Valley West and the Alder Grove Industrial Park via West End Road. The grant received includes funding to support public outreach and planning activities to help improve safety on the Sunset Avenue and Gentoli Lane overpasses, and to identify trail alignments and connections to the new trail from neighborhoods, park areas, and businesses. The Annie and Mary Trail Connectivity Project team includes knowledgeable engineers and planners from the City of Arcata, the Redwood Community Action Agency, Trail People, and SHN, who are committed to ensuring robust public participation through the planning process. The project team will work to assess current opportunities and challenges for pedestrians between downtown Arcata, the Valley West neighborhood, and Humboldt State University, in addition to developing concept design alternatives for a trail and or on-street facilities for safe pedestrian connectivity between these important community destinations. So the first public workshop regarding the project will be held on Monday, February 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the D Street Neighborhood Center, located at 1301 D Street in Arcata. All interested community members are encouraged to attend and share your input with the project team. If you're not able to make the workshop, you are encouraged to take a project survey that's available online at thecityofarcata.org website. www.cityofarcata.org. These trails will also be in the same location as the Arcata Village project, so good recreational activity for those people in there. All right. Surfrider Foundation is having a shotgun wad watcher program. So as people who visit the beaches in this area know, plastic shotgun wads are showing up in great numbers along the beaches and other waterways and shorelines. And it's not just a local issue. They're happening throughout the world. Projected from shotgun barrels, the plastic wads are shot into marshes or over water where they're difficult to retrieve. Plus, heavy rains and high tides cause the wads to float to the sea where they remain until picked up and sometimes photographed by concerned citizens. So during the NEC's 2018 Coastal Cleanup Day, almost 200 of these shotgun wads were picked up, with over half of those picked up at the South Jetty, South Spit area. So Surfrider's calling citizen scientists to help out with this plastic plague. Next time you find wads on the beach, take a picture and post it to Surfrider's shotgun wad data collection map, available at http://sf.surfrider.org/shotgun-wad-watcher/. Wow, we will also have that link on our website as well for those people.
Well, thanks for that. And that is something that those wads do not biodegrade. So just like the cigarette butts,
right.
They're there for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, unfortunately wind up in the biosystem one way or another, either being ingested or caught up on something.
Right.
Okay, so in national or global type news, the U.S. Supreme Court has refused to block Exxon climate fraud case. The U.S. Supreme Court recently decided to take up ExxonMobil's latest attempt to block Massachusetts' investigation onto whether the oil giant misled the public and investors about climate change. The decision clears the way for Attorney General Mara Healey to force the company to turn over records as her office probes whether Exxon concealed its knowledge of the role fossil fuels play in global warming. These records could open up a window into the company's internal discussions, including handling of financial and climate data as it's charted its business path going back decades. This is very similar to the sorts of cases that eventually brought down the tobacco industry.
Mm.
So this is a very significant one. Good news on that front.
Yep.
So on the grim news front, seems like we have more and more of these stories all the time. The latest studies are showing that the world's oceans are warming faster than even the models had predicted. Global warming is here, and it has major consequences, and it's going to be very, very difficult to get this under control, the author of the new report says. The study published recently strengthens the consensus that warming of the world's oceans is accelerating, and it's a trend that climate models have long predicted but had difficulty trying to confirm them until recently. The findings are a vindication of the scientific community's work so far and lend greater weight to the projections for warming through the end of this century. Gavin Schmidt, a leading climate scientist at Columbia University, recently said, "The overall point was that global warming is accelerating, and that held true in this study. And it helps start explaining why we're beginning to see the effects of warming through stronger storms and severe weather. It has major consequences," Kevin Tenbreth, climate scientist at the National Center for Atmospheric Research, said. "That doesn't mean we shouldn't try, because any time we can slow down, if not stop it, it allows us to adapt to it and plan for it and to deal with some expected consequences in a much better fashion. Understanding how ocean temperatures have changed is particularly valuable in understanding climate change. More than 90% of excess heat from greenhouse gas emissions has been absorbed into the ocean, where the energy can fuel larger and more intense hurricanes and contributes to sea level rise as the seawater expands." So in more climate change disaster news,
all right.
California's Camp Fire was the most expensive natural disaster worldwide in 2018. The Camp Fire, which killed 87 people and burned in the Northern California town of Paradise, didn't just burn in it, it burned it to the ground in November, It was last year's most expensive natural disaster worldwide, according to a report from the German-based global reinsurance company Munich Re. The fire, which was the deadliest and most destructive in the state's modern history, tore through nearly 14,000 homes around Paradise, California. The blaze holds another devastating record, according to the report released Tuesday, the costliest natural disaster in 2018. It cost $16.5 billion in losses, including $12.5 billion of insured losses, which is why this German firm was, they're hired by the insurance companies to figure that out. So huge, huge cost to everyone. And so our next article is exactly that. Who pays for this? Because everybody's starting to want to know, well, if these disasters just keep costing billions of dollars, who's paying? Well, one of the big people who's going to be forced to pay out is Pacific Gas and Electric, because they have been at the heart of several of these big disasters. Right. The Wine Country fires in 2017, and then the Camp Fire in 2018. The San Francisco-based power company had just recently resolved a lawsuit stemming from the 2010 pipeline explosion, which, of course, that wasn't about climate change. But they just resolved that. And now here, 2 years later, PG&E is headed for bankruptcy. So the alarming part of all this is that this is one company, and they're a major company. They were one of the biggest publicly owned utilities in the world. And if they can be taken to their knees this fast with a rapid transformation of one of America's leading power companies into a corporate zombie, underscores the rapidly accelerating risks from climate change facing energy companies, insurers, and governments. While much of PG&E's fall can be linked to the company's faulty safety record, analysts say the risks posed by climate change disasters threaten to overrun even the best-run companies, along with insurance systems and governments. Sobering thoughts.
Yep.
So, that brings us to this ridiculous, unnecessary government shutdown. And for those of you that live in the backwoods around here and say, well, it's not affecting me, you might want to think about that again, because wildfire prevention activities by the federal government have been completely stalled because of the shutdown. Because the agencies, U.S. Forest Service, National Park Service, Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the Bureau of Indian Affairs are shut down. And they're running out of money, or have no money.
Right.
So this is the time of year when the prep work starts. And they quote a local from Hayfork, Nick Goulet, "Some of the time you just can't get back," executive director of the Watershed Center said, a nonprofit community forest fire management group in Northwest California. "If it's a 2 month shutdown, it doesn't mean you've just lost 2 months worth of work. It means that the work you were planning to do gets bumped to another fire season, and so you wind up a year behind in your work." Because they have a very narrow window when they can do prescribed fire, and it's right now.
Right.
So this ill-conceived government shutdown has already created a backlog of controlled burns in the West, said Goulet, whose group does controlled burns in communities around in Northern California, including the Shasta Trinity National Forest and Six Rivers National Forest, where wildfires occur every year. "There's a sense of urgency that we've got to get caught up. We've got to bring down this backlog. But in reality, it's just getting compound, and there's not going to be any catching up." So up in Canada, the Canadian government's also feeling the effects of our president, not my president, but the country's president. The Canadian government, two territories of Canada, and several First Nations, which is what Canada calls its indigenous people, are expressing concerns to the United States over plans to open the calving grounds of a large cross-border caribou herd to energy drilling, despite international agreements that are supposed to protect it. Canon is concerned about the potential of transboundary impacts of oil and gas exploration and development plan for the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge Coastal Plain, says the letter from Environment Canada to the Alaskan office of the U.S. Bureau of Land Management, which, by the way, is shut down. So I don't know if anybody actually got that letter.
Right.
Yukon and the Northwest Territories have submitted similar concerns as the administration of Donald Trump drafts plans to study the environmental impact of selling exploration leases on the ecologically rich plain. Much of the wildlife that inhabits the refuge is shared with Canada. The conservation of these transboundary shared resources is very important to Indigenous groups. The caribou herd, that's called the porcupine herd, is one of the few remaining healthy caribou populations in the north and a critical resource for Indigenous people. That's how they sustain themselves through the long winters up there, is with caribou.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, tough times for those folks.
Right, yep.
So we've found this article about the healthcare industry, which I thought was sort of fascinating. If U.S. healthcare industry was a country, it would rank 7th in the world for total emissions. Wildfire death, smoky air, floods, and drought are all a reality in global warming, and these are all the known threats of climate change. But the New England Journal of Medicine article on the health impact of climate change, published recently, spells out what's at stake for human health. Between 2030 and 2050, 250,000 deaths could be caused by climate change and related health problems, such as heat exposure, mosquito-borne illnesses, and flooding. Air pollution, including household air pollution, already caused 6.5 million premature deaths every year. But that's not all. It turns out that the business of saving lives is part of the problem. In the U.S. alone, healthcare accounts for nearly a tenth of greenhouse gas emissions. Life-saving equipment like CAT scanners, respirators, dialysis machines have huge energy demands currently met by the fossil fuel industry. If U.S. healthcare were a country, according to co-author Regina LaRoque, it would have a $3.3 trillion GDP and rank 7th in the world. Hospitals also produce about a pound of hazardous medical waste per bed per day. So it sounds like our health industry needs to wake up to their footprint, which seems to be excessively large. Also around global change, we have a global commission that has called for a food revolution to solve the world's climate and nutrition problems. The ambitious report on global food system from a commission convened by the prestigious medical journal The Lancet calls for radical change in food production, or as one of the authors put it, nothing less than a global agricultural revolution. Its latest research to emphasize that the futures of climate and human health are deeply intertwined. In order to meaningfully reduce greenhouse gas emissions and stabilize the climate, the world needs a comprehensive shift in its diet, the author says. The dominant diets that the world has been producing and eating for the last 50 years are no longer nutritionally optimal and are a major contributor to climate change and are accelerating the erosion of natural biodiversity, the Lancet editors wrote in a commentary accompanying the report released last week. The authors, a commission of 37 experts from 16 countries across a range of disciplines, proposed scientific targets for diet and food production to improve human health and to achieve the ambitions of the Paris Climate Agreement, as well as the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. Overall, the author's vision encompasses the entire food system, on how farmers treat the soil, what crops they choose to plant, and a global shift towards plant-based diets. They're calling for cutting meat consumption in half and cutting food waste in half and transforming the agricultural system into a powerful carbon sink within 3 decades by swapping resource-intensive farming methods for those that regenerate soil and limit fertilizer demand. Sounds like old Robert Rodale in Organic Gardening Magazine in the 1950s was calling for that. Mm-hmm. So people are finally caught up with that reality. So some reasonably good news from India, I think. India, while it's had trouble rolling out its dictum that all cars produced by 2030 be electric, they're not going to make that. But what they've had success with is getting increased purchases of electric motorcycles.
Ooh.
And in fact, they've done very well with that. And the sales of electric bikes is exploding. It makes sense for the average person that lives in India. It's a low investment for them. It's something they can afford. A single charge is 150 rupees, which is $2.15 in our monetary system. And that's what they'd spend to go the same distance that they would for fuel. So not burning fuel, using electricity to power themselves around. So some of the big companies are jumping in on this. It looks like Suzuki and Yamaha are planning to make vehicles for that market, along with the Indian-based companies that are already making electric cycles. And I was talking with Bella about it before the show here, and we think that'd be a great thing for Arcata, especially with the plans to maybe limit vehicle access to the plaza. Wouldn't it be cool to see students riding on electric bikes instead?
Yep.
So anyways, I thought that was some good news, and hats off to Suzuki and Yamaha for jumping into that and seeing that there's a market there.
All right. Well, and also, if you can make it out to our open house this evening at 4 o'clock, it's from 4 to 7. Stop on by, say hi, have some snacks, learn about what NEC's been working on. You can find our office at 415 I Street in Arcata. So this has been the Eco News Report with Bella Waters and Larry Glass, and we've been your hosts for the past half hour. You can find more information about the issues we've discussed on the NEC website, www.yournec.org. If you'd like to replay this interview or share it with others, you can go to the public affairs page on the KHSU website at khsu.org, where these programs are archived for 2 weeks after they air. Previous shows are posted on the North Coast Environmental Center website at yournec.org. If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call KHSU's listener comment line at 826-6089. The Eco News Report is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University in cooperation with the North Coast Environmental Center. Many thanks to Fred McLaughlin for engineering. Join us again right here on KHSU for the next Eco News Report.